Welcome everyone to the technical committee meeting. I think we have. Have we got a full two now? Have we any apologies? Oh, sorry. Yeah, apologies to Graham. I'll move. Seconded. Seconded Councillor Hope. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Attendance all sorted. Confirmation of the agenda. No changes. Matter of urgency or anything. Conflict of interest, standard advice there for everyone to note. Public forum, we have no public forum. Presentation, we have no presentations. And confirmation of the minutes, the meeting, the technical committee meeting held on the 21st of March 2018. I move from the chair that it be received and confirmed. Was I at the meeting? Was a good question.
Yes,
I was. So I'll move. Have a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Robertson. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The actions with regards to the resolution set out there with the stead, progressing the stead, is essentially closed, and we're about to discuss that item right now. So the report is self-explanatory. You will note we have had a considerable discussion about the stead, or the location of this particular stead, and if you just, I'll just take you to the recommendation on page 11 of 32, and you will note that the recommendation B is around essentially requesting Central Otago District Council to formally advise their preferred site. The chairman, Councillor Woodhead, just made a comment in the break about we probably need to firm that up to ensure that we include the criteria, the NZTA criteria. So that if they come back with an alternative site, that it needs to meet the NZTA criteria, because otherwise it may not, if it doesn't tick those boxes, we're no further ahead. So when we move that, we will include that amendment.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, so discussion, and I don't want this to get into a debate about they said, we said, whatever. I think we're being reasonably clear and tolerant by allowing Central Otago to, Central Otago District Council to formalise their position. I know they've had a lot of time up until this point, but essentially we've now put a line in the sand, and we've made it clear to them when we expect them to respond, and if they don't respond, then it leaves the decision, the final decision, with us. But we would rather work in collaboration with Central Otago, so this is certainly a signal to achieve that. Councillor Laws.
First of all, I'm not opposed to the motion at all. I think it's reasonable to expect there to be a level of communication. I would ask, though, that the regional councillors in that ward, which is Bell, Laws and Lawton, be included in this communication discussion and seek to amend our motions to that effect. I want to take you to, if I may, the bottom of page 9 of this particular report, the conclusion, which says that it is noted that the Section Highway 6 Riffinvale Strait site is the preferred option of the ORC. Then I want to take you, if I might, to the technical committee attachment, and in particular the map on which that site is located. So it looks like that.
Has it got a page number?
It has a site number, doesn't it?
Yes, it
does. Can you tell what the site 2 is? I think it's site 2. Now, in the preparatory paper that's been prepared for this, there's one vital piece of information moving. So, I oppose, obviously, putting it on the Riffinvale Strait along with the Central Otago District Council, the Cromwell community, and virtually every tourist development that's around that area. But if you actually have a look at where it's proposed, it's useful to actually have a look, and this is where this information is not up to date that's been presented in this paper to you. across the road to a holding called K.M. and P. Muller and G. Hansen. Now, you remember that in this paper that's been prepared by the ORC for today's paper, committee, the submission is that, listen, it's 400 metres away from the nearest residence anyhow. No, not anymore. Right across the road in that very large section is the latest 850 section subdivision proposed for Cromwell, which is being proposed by developers based in both Auckland and Queenstown, and has the support of the Central Otago District Council to change the residential zone. The preparatory work has already started along for that. Infrastructure is already going in ahead of that plan change being granted. And it is going to be a huge residential development for not just for Cromwell, but for the entire Central Otago. It will be right across the road from that. So not only is that beautiful line of poplars, which unfortunately you can't see this in colour, but it is now resplendent in all its glory along that Rippenville Strait, one of the great iconic sites of New Zealand, let alone of Otago and Central Otago. And I know that you're not used to seeing scenic sites a lot in South Otago, Mr. Chairman. But in actual fact, that is
the reason. Couple of weeks a year, there's a poplar.
Why there might be a poplar in Balclutha that changes its colour. That's delightful. But this is a stream of them. And right now, as I would be talking to you, there would be literally busloads of tourists from other countries taking photos of that most magnificent autumnal display. And it's something that the community is very, very proud of, and one of the reasons why Central Otago District Council has strenuously objected to the Rippenville Strait being considered. It would be the worst kind of vandalism, the Otago Regional Council, not just to ignore the communities in that locale as to their views on this issue, but to in any way degrade. As I said, one of the great tourist photographs of New Zealand. But also this information isn't up to date. 850 houses will be going straight across the road, and that is going to change this perspective completely. So for those reasons, I would like to flag that we should not have the Rippenville Strait as one of our options when we are going forward. So I want the motion to go forward with that amendment that I've suggested, that the Dunstan Ward councillors be involved in that communication. But I'd also like for us to strike out the Rippenville Strait as an option for the stead. There are plenty of other options in here. They're very good. They won't cause a problem. You go ahead with this one, and it will cause huge problems.
Thank you, Councillor Lawson. Now, that is the exact reason why we've amended the motion that was originally circulated, indicating our support for the Rippenville site. So what you've just said, I think, is very fair and very accurate. But it's now the emphasis now is on the Central Otago District Council to essentially put their stake in the ground and give us clear direction what they want. So thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Just a quick note on this. apologies, Councillor Laws, I had had communication with Central Otago District Council about that. So
that's right.
The recommendation has been improved since the initial discussion. The I do note they came back with about 10 options that they wanted to work through, three of which they thought were significant, one of which is on the Queensland Lakes District Council area. So if that, you can see where this is going, if that site is progressed or looked at in any further detail, can we please make sure that the conversation's held with Queensland Lakes District Council as soon as possible too, which I'd like to be involved in if that discussion takes place. Have we moved this?
No, not yet, but how about, and I sense that Councillor Laws and Councillor Lawton will move and second this, but take AA as as circulated. 8B, if it reads something along the lines, Council requests for Central Otago District Council to formally advise their preferred site that meets NZTA criteria for the second new steps in Central Otago by 31 July 2018. And then the third one, that the Dunstan Ward councillors are briefed.
Or kept informed.
Kept informed.
And included in all communications.
Okay.
Jim, I object to that. It's nothing to do with one ward councillor.
Yes, it is. So can I just clarify? So when you are asking to be kept informed, is that an instruction to Central Otago District Council? Is that an instruction
to us? And with all due respect, we've actually, to answer the chairman, we've actually passed this motion already, Stephen. So the motion that Central Otago, and it was ignored, which is why it is worth the repeat. We passed unanimously, I think it was at Val Clutha, was it?
31st of the 1st.
Yeah, 31st of the 1st. Oh. A motion that said exactly what we've just said, Stephen. And we came back here and we weren't informed at all. And if you remember, I got a bit shooty about that because a governance motion to staff is pretty damn clear. So I'm just making sure that the governance motion is understood. The status quo.
Right. We can discuss it and vote on it.
Fair enough. My only suggestion, just looking for a way forward, is that the elected arm of the Otago Regional Council is kept informed.
As
to the progress.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yep. Happy for all councillors. Yep.
Okay. So let's just tidy this up. So yep. Moved by Councillor Laws, this is A, B and C.
Yes, okay. That's fine.
Seconded by Councillor Lawton.
Thank you.
Yep. So is everyone comfortable with where we're at, or you want me just to repeat exactly what we're moving and seconded, or what's been moved and seconded? Is everyone comfortable?
Well, there might be wider discussion on the whole page.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Open for discussion. Okay. Any discussion? Oh, Councillor Woodhead, then Councillor Scott, then Councillor Lawton.
So I'm going to go back to the whole paper because I think there is some things that we need to remind ourselves of here. And we're all well aware that this has been going on for a decade or so. And the key point is here that Central Otago District Council actually doesn't want to pay. It's always been their stance.
Sure.
And we've understood that, and that's fine. Second aspect of that is the time for their conversation around this process is part of the Regional Land Transport Committee. Right, so there's no Central Otago District Council, just to be clear, we've been nice boys and girls, but there's no Central Otago District Council decision required here, actually. It's not their land. They're saying they don't want to be involved, we don't want to pay, but actually have inhibited the completion of a regional network. The other thing we need to remind ourselves of is the primary issue, and good report, thank you, Mr. Opus and friends, and a reminder of some of the photos in the opening pages, reminder of the actual issue here is road safety. And Councillor Kempton, you and I and Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Collins are in Queenstown on Monday, and the latest data on some of the road traffic counts up there, you know, they're 25,000 to 28,000 vehicles a day. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that they're all going to drive down this road to take a photo of the poplar leaves for the 3 or 4 weeks that they're in a particular colour or position, but the roads are very busy and continuing to get busy, and there's a lot of visitors, and there is a road safety issue here, which is why they, after a lot of work looking at the legislation and national working groups with the Road Transport Association and local government, that we got to the point of jointly with the taxpayers funding a regional network of steers. We were one of the first regions in the country to get up and go. And our friends in Southland, through the Regional Transport Committee, have jointly looked at the network across the southern South Island in 2015, Councillor Kempton or something, you'll remind us surely.
Yep.
And here we are trying to complete this network. So don't lose sight of the road safety. Also, the report spells out very clearly the work that's been done with the Road Transport Association, local large trucking companies. Hey guys, from an industry perspective, where's the best site? What would be useful for you? And that's where we've got to this site. I've taken the opportunity of being up that road two or three times in the last 10 days. And last Thursday, between a couple of our meetings, Councillor Lawton, he sat there for, not sure how long, an hour or so on the side of the road, and observed what was occurring. And I agree, Councillor Laws, it's a very popular spot, particularly with visitors. At the western end of a 2 kilometre straight, where one of the orchards is sited, a lot of buses stop, a lot of people, if not them all, getting off taking photos, and private vehicles on both sides of the road. There's ample ground there for parking and visibility, but it looked like the orchard was actually had a staff member out there managing the safety issue with people potentially crossing the road, but very popular, buses through all the time. A wedding party popped out, took a couple of photos, and then a visiting family jumped out of a car and flew a drone. And that was in the 40 or 50 minutes I was there. They're great. Very popular. Councillor Brown. So, but the one point I'd like to make with respect to that is it all happens at the far end. There are safe pull-off areas for that to occur. Car parks and pull-off roads on the side of the... At the far end where the stead is being sited, interestingly, there's two things occur. One, there's no safe area to pull off. Two, there's actually intermingled with old pine trees. It's not the pure poplar shot. It's a kilometre up the road. So the actual observing the visitor behaviour or, they were calling visitors, and with respect to photographs, was interesting for me on the day. And the other thing we forget is there's about a 3 or 4 week window annually that this actually occurs. Nobody stops after the leaves are gone and the autumn colour's gone. But let's just keep that in context. I looked from the far end down the 2 kilometre straight to where a truck might be parked, and I'll acknowledge, my wife will back me up, I'm getting to the stage of needing glasses, but you'd be struggling to see it. Get real. So, I'm a bit grumpy, as you may be able to tell, and this is more time being wasted. Dr. Palmer, can you tell us how much money we've spent in these assessments so far? Because the one point that's made in this OPIS report, they've driven around most of Central Otago and Queenstown Lakes and checked every site already. There's no new site hiding down a road. Let's get real.
How much
have we spent, Dr. Palmer, please?
I was just going to rule it. I'm not sure it's a fair question for Dr. Palmer to be able to pull a number off the top of his head. And I'm also mindful. He's got a number. Okay.
Let's have a number.
Righto, let's have a number.
Through Mr. Chairman, the most recent site reassessment has cost about $10,000. And then there'll be some future costs if it's a site other than Rip and Vale and it's not incorporated into the current construction contract in terms of additional tender process and those other things. But those are future costs dependent on whatever decision is made about the future site.
Thank you. So it's about $10,000 from OPIS to walk out the door again. I think we just need to understand that also. And I'll conclude with a couple of closing remarks, Mr. Chairman, and remind us, this recommendation we're gerrymandering is not the staff recommendation. Staff recommendation is build. Get on with it. Politics has already had a play in this before it even got to a formal meeting. And I just can't see, if there were alternatives out there, be all right, but throwing a dart at a board, or what about the race course, or what about down that side road, they've been assessed and looked at, and the ones that are viable have been investigated, and we've got two preferred.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, okay. It's hard to argue with a lot of what Councillor Woodhead has raised. But look, at the end of the day, and legally, the ideal process is that we consult, with the local community. And ideally, that there's an appropriate process. Yeah, they mightn't be paying. Yeah, road safety might be the fundamental issue. But let's all push that to the side. We're looking at putting something within a community. I mean, if you want to talk about money, I think what Councillor Laws is saying, if it's 850 houses across the road, is that what you said?
Yes, 850.
850, you know, the average house in Central Tate, you know, you're not getting much change out of $1 million. Mm. You're talking about $1 billion development over the road, and we're getting all flustered over 10,000 in terms of, you know, the design and so forth. So look, it's quite simple from my perspective, is we just provide the opportunity and the assistance to CODC to find an alternative site to a specific criteria, the NZTA criteria, and not just go, here, you have a go at it. Actually work with them and assist them and go through so they feel that they've been on that journey. And if they're unsuccessful, they're unsuccessful, and then it comes back to this table for a decision. And that's the process. Let's not get flustered about it. Let's give them time. But you know, it's not about, I say it again, it's not about who pays. It's actually about the regional council being a bit humble and doing as well as it can and consulting, but being quite specific on the criteria and not being hands-off, actually assisting them through this process so they have the best chance to actually get an outcome for them and for us. And that's the process, and we give them a reasonable amount of time. We work positively with them, and at the end of the day, if they can find a site that meets the criteria, well done. If they can't, then it'll come back to this table.
Thank you, Councillor Scott. Councillor Lawton, then Councillor Kempton, then Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, thank you. If I remember rightly, I think Councillor Laws passed a motion at the Balclutha meeting that we would engage with CODC on this. So, is that right? Yeah. So, we had already said that we would undertake to do that, and we needed a resolution. Can I a decision from them? Can we also just from the Zone 5 and 6 meeting, there was a proposal by Mayor Tim Cadogan, just as a heads up that we'll probably see this before the AGM for LGNZ, that there is an amendment made to the New Zealand Land Transport Act that has effluent included in that piece of legislation as being something that...
Part of the legal description of load.
There it is, load. Yes. So load includes animal effluent, because currently it doesn't, and therefore there's a more rigid requirement for drivers of stock trucks to keep that load on their truck rather than spilling out, which would, I think from my understanding, go back to the farmers to ensure that the management of stock prior to getting on the truck is also followed through, and therefore reduce the need for steads in the long term. Okay, so just as a heads up, bringing it back to the bigger picture here of we're talking about, you know, obviously bottom of the cliff stuff rather than actually how we end up with effluent requiring to be removed anyway. We'll see this and have a discussion, I'm guessing, when we vote on the... What are they called when they go to Long LGNZ conference?
Remit.
Remit, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lawton. I'll come back to you in a moment. Unless it related to Councillor Lawton's comment about...
Oh, yes, it's remit. Mayor Cadogan was encouraged to talk to the stakeholders. I'm not sure whether it will turn up as a remit yet or not. Wait and see. But he needs to do a lot of homework to understand what he's... Because it's actually... The legal description talks about the effluent in the animal time. Floating. That's why it's excluded... Again, it's about paying.
And I'll just draw everyone's attention to the second paragraph on page 6, last sentence, where basically ORC instructed a conversation to occur between OPIS and CODC as the investigation occurred, just so that there was communication happening between this council and CODC via OPIS. Just want to make that clear. Councillor Kempton.
Thank you. Look, just very briefly, before I launch into the tirade, it is that no matter what the legislation says about stock effluent. There will still be a need for steads.
Yes.
You just can't stop the natural functions, unfortunately. You can do a little to reduce them by stock management, as you well know. And certainly there is advocacy going back directly through, continuously through to MOT, through the GPS and so on, right now. But at the same time, these steads are being built on the basis that if they're not on the road, they're not going to get used. And when the legislation changes, which it might do, only might, then potentially these get leased to private enterprise, who then charge the industry. That's the potential outcome. And look, one thing we've got to be really careful about this is these criteria we talk about. NZTA's set criteria relate to geometry only. They don't relate to the other safety aspects which are our responsibility. This is an Otago Regional Council project. We are responsible for the safety outcomes, and it will be us ultimately who decide how much we're going to compromise safety so a wedding party can get a photo beside some autumn poplars. Right? It will be us who do that. Now, I've heard on this council, but safety's paramount. Well, we've got to make sure that we walk the talk.
Yeah, well, what's
right?
The criteria?
Now, having said that, first of all, NZTA have some geometric criteria. Location is extremely important for safety because there's a very small highway window which will allow us to do two important things. One of them is to capture the loads coming from Hawea Flat. That's really important. And the other options don't do that. Capture the loads coming from Hawea Flat and get it discharged before the trucks start swinging from right to left to right to left through the Kawara Gorge and spilling everything off their decks. So it isn't just NZTA's geometry that's important here. Pardon?
Put it in Hawea Flat then.
That's a really good point, because there's no dairy bloody stuff coming
out.
Let
Kempton finishes.
So what I'm saying is, I don't actually care where we finally decide to put this thing, so long as we understand three things. NZTA requirements, the optimum place to make sure that it doesn't get on the road, and servicing the farming area appropriately. So those three things, in my view, have to be put to CODC because they depend on the local economy just as they do the tourist economy. So we've got to be seen to be supporting them as well. So I think that those are additional criteria that CODC have to have in mind when they're away searching for sites. I mean, I have my views around the super sensitivity to wondering what's going on across the road underneath a truck behind some bloody trees and whether or not you might smell the odd farmyard smell once a season. But put that aside, make sure that CODC understand this isn't just about being able to turn a truck. It's about more than that.
Thank you. Councillor Robertson.
Thanks. Yeah, I won't go over the things that people have said already. We have been engaging with the CODC and that has been covered, and we have given the CODC a chance to come back with alternative sites beyond our assessment, which hasn't happened. I just like to think about this objectively as a hearings commissioner, if this was something that came before me. We have a robust assessment of alternative sites already. We've been through nine, came out with this one with expert consultant input into that, so that wouldn't be questioned. Safety, as has already been covered, of having, trying to think of the appropriate farmer terminology for what goes all over the road, councillor laws. But, safety issues. And then I think really we need to move into, if this is the preferred site, and we're saying it is, mitigation then. What can we actually offer? So what does this look like if everyone would be happy? The picture there looks like, I might be wrong, but pine trees, is it?
There's some pine trees there.
There's some pine trees. But
yeah, pine trees next to where the site would be. So, okay, let's say it's across the road from some pine trees and right down the end of the poplars. And what can we do in that area to screen that and make it appropriately landscaped? Then let's have a look at, can we offset, can we make this even better as a sightseeing opportunity for people to see the poplars? So, signpost it, this is a scenic area and this is the place you go in and you park to see it. And it's down the other end where Councillor Woodhead says. And when you look back, you can't really at all in the end see visually the impact of the stead. So surely we could present something along those lines that CODC perhaps might be able to wear with their community, because that's really what it's about at this point. We've got so far entrenched into our separate views that we need to now be able to discuss this in a positive and different type manner that everyone saves face.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson. Any other speakers? I've just got a couple of comments. I absolutely accept the point about this is, and it's important to deal with safety issues, and I put my hand up, that's, we need to ensure that is an outcome eventually. But I also defend democracy and collaboration, and in particular, I look at the region and the TLAs, and there are a number of activities that overlap the TLAs and the regional council, and we've got some issues bubbling away probably with each TLA, and I cannot see any point in creating a direction that clearly the TLA is not going to be comfortable with, in this case Central Otago District Council. Essentially, if we were to support the Rip and Vale site, they would clearly come back to us and say we are not happy, and encourage us to revisit it. And I suppose a delegation from Mayor Cadogan and others could well be something we're confronted with further down the track. This to me is just a way of ensuring that we mitigate the potential of having a disagreement via the media. We encourage collaboration. We understand that they have certain views around this particular site, and I absolutely also note the potential land change across the road has become a part of this discussion, wasn't when Opus did their investigation. I absolutely accept that, but I think this is just, it's a common sense approach. It allows Central Otago within a certain time frame to come back to us, give us an indication of where their preferred site is, so then we can get on with the job. And Central Otago District Council will need to issue a building consent at some point further down the track. So it does make perfect sense that we work in collaboration to achieve an outcome that suits both parties. Are there any other speakers?
Can I have my right of reply?
Yes, you are. You can. Councillor Laws.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You make some very salient points. Can I just answer some of them? Listen, this canard about safety, and it is a canard. It's a false argument. Safety is going to be further compromised putting a stead there, ironically. If you're going to have passages of trucks going in and out, you are going to be increasing the safety dangers, not improving safety at all in that particular locale. Secondly, let's go on the alternatives. The truth of the matter is, and there's a very eloquent email that I have now received, thank you, Ella, from Tim Cadogan. And he makes the point that, and a very fair point, that many of the alternatives in the Opus report have been ruled out on the basis of their proximity to residential accommodation. Now, what's the biggest residential accommodation that is proposed near any of these steads? Ironically, right across the road from the preferred option, where 850 or 40 sections are going to be located. It is going to become major residential development. Already with the approval of the Central Otago District Council, and they didn't do it just to annoy you on steads. Thirdly, you're right, the Central Otago District Council doesn't want to pay for the steads, and they have a very valid argument as to why their ratepayers should not be levied for an expense that should be proportionately shared across the region. But that isn't stopping them from adhering to this conversation. They have communicated to all of us at some stage their views on steads. And it pretty much goes like this. The worst possible place you could put it would be on Rippendale Strait for the reasons that have been promoted here today. Finally, can I also answer this nonsense about, oh, it's only for 3 weeks a year, or 3 or 4 weeks a year, that this is a major tourist attraction? I guess, you know, if we applied that logic to every tourist attraction that was seasonal, I'd worry where we'd put our industrial sites in this country. I guess when the whales go through Kaikoura during certain times of the country, we wouldn't worry if there was commercial fishing happening there at the same time, because only for 3 or 4 weeks of the year. You don't play around with major iconic tourist attractions that promote this region in a positive sense, not just to the rest of the country, but the rest of the world. Here we are at the end of the day. Right across the road. And if would any of us like a stead opposite our residences? No, of course we wouldn't. We get upset about it? Yes, we would. Would we protest and foment to get it? Yes, we would. But we're quite happy to do it to others. And I cannot believe that we would even consider Rippendale as an alternative given the strong and unanimous community sentiment against it.
Thank you, Councillor. We'll now put the recommendations A, B and C.
Everyone... Can we take them separately, Mr Chairman?
Yes, certainly. Yep. No problem. So I'll put 8A. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Can you read it out?
Oh, okay. No. This report is received. And
good start.
I'll put 8A. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. 8B, Council requests for the Central Otago District Council to formally advise their preferred site that meets NZTA criteria for the second new stead in Central Otago by 31 July 2018.
But can I just check that we get our wording correct here, picking up Councillor Kempton's view and perhaps asking Dr Palmer for advice. What I'm intending there is ensuring that it's a complying site. We don't bring up another whole lot of red flags and waste people's time or money. And so whatever the appropriate wording is, it may not be NZTA criteria, it might be all criteria, Councillor Kemp.
NZTA and ORC criteria.
Well, what's our criteria?
Can we just ask Dr Palmer first just to help guide us?
Criteria. Criteria.
We haven't got any criteria.
We must have a criteria.
Hang on, please. Dr Palmer, are you able to guide us?
I think the incorporation of the criteria is part of the discussion that we need to have between the three parties. The CODC is very familiar with it through their work with OPIS. Some of those things will be mandatory and some things will be discretionary. For example, a stead can be constructed on privately owned land, subject to some conditions. So I'm okay with the recommendation not including a reference to sticking to criteria. To me, it's kind of implicit in it. And it's one of the things we need to work through, how many of the criteria are must-haves versus things that we can, between the three parties, agree to be quite flexible on.
So it'd be better with it out.
I think we'd be better with it out.
So a complying site or not even...
Just leave it as it is.
I think Central Otago District Council know to put forward things that are lawful and meet the mandatory criteria. And we'll make sure they know about them.
Yep. So I'm happy to revert back to the original recommendation and hearing that advice. But staff also heard the intent of the discussion.
Yes. So, 8B.
Can we speak to this motion?
So, essentially it's been amended from what was moved and seconded. So, yes, you can speak to the amendment. So, we're talking about the 8B as circulated
Yeah. Okay. And it was just about criteria. To be honest, I'm just a little bit confused about this because I would have thought that the criteria would be very well defined. I haven't read the OPIS report. I've read what's been put in front of me here. The criteria should be, because we've been saying things like, oh, that site is okay, or those nine sites aren't okay. So I would have thought the criteria was very well defined. And I'm nervous about saying to the COC, I'll come up with a preferred site. Because they're going to say, oh, that one over there is their preferred site. And we're going to say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't meet our criteria. Well, the criteria needs to be very black and white and well defined. Because I'm wondering whether this is leading to some of the mystique around this. The criteria needs to be clearly defined, and if it is well defined, what is it?
Well, in the report, I can't remember where it was in the... So page 5 of 32, the OPIS were commissioned to identify, third paragraph down, identify potential sites with consideration of the following criteria. So that's my understanding is the NZTA criteria.
Yeah, but what we're saying... Is that, as Councillor Kenton has said, is that there's some criteria over and above that. Like, the reason it apparently has to be there is because it's before the Carwell Gorge and it's on a link between here and Harware South, plus some other criteria. Is that in the tick box?
So
if I could speak to that.
Just for one second, yep. I'm just going to ask Dr. Palmer just to share with us anything you can to help direct us.
So I wonder whether or not committee might be minded for another resolution which starts with CODC, ORC and NZTA agreeing the criteria.
Yeah,
thank you. And then B is reworded to formally advise their preferred site for the second step that satisfies the agreed criteria.
Right.
Because one of the things about the criteria is how much weight do you give to a possible future residential development? You know, that's a discretionary matter, a matter of judgment, and that seems to be a bit of a sticking point. So maybe the first step is to agree the criteria. How much we would? What are the criteria, and how much weight we would give to them?
There are two issues. Can I say? The first issue is that this OPIS report didn't look at anything new. It was asked to look at the proposed ones that already existed. So in a certain way, it stops the CODC moving out of, or maybe finding a really good site, because we're only looking at the sites that had been proposed beforehand. That's what this OPIS report asks. Second question to us, the specific issue, is that OPIS unfortunately used the proximity of residential developments as reasons to strike out some of those proposals. And yet, here we now have something that is massive happening.
I said that before.
So you really need to update.
That's a good idea.
So just before we go any further, I want to go to Councillor Kempton, and then I'm going to go back to Lauren just to pick up on what Gavin's said.
I'm happy to move the motion based on what... what's the director said?
Hold that thought for a second. Councillor
Whether we call them criteria or not, we have a list in there of what are essentially local criteria. Right? Criteria around the operation of a site at that point. But what's really important is that we actually that the site is put in a place that makes sense with respect to network. You could put it anywhere and it'll never see a truck. Right, so it's got to actually service the district, and be part of a regional network. That's fundamental, because that's the way we minimise the amount of crap that goes on the roads. So that's what I mean by criteria. There are wider criteria around the fact that it has to make sense in terms of the established network and its ability to service and mitigate safety issues. But I'm sure that will come through in the discussions.
Okay. So I want to go to Lauren just to pick up on the two points that Dr. Palmer made. And one... seconder rather than Councillor Scott might just be tidier. You're happy for that to be incorporated as the B, Councillor Laws and Councillor Orton?
Yeah, sorry, could you repeat it?
So I'm just asking you, Council Laws, and Council Lawton, as the mover and seconder of the original motion, that B has been rewritten in the way that Lauren has just read out. Are you happy to adopt that as, you're happy to move B in its modified form? Would you like to read it out again?
Thank you, Lauren.
So we're asking them to do two things. First of all, work out the criteria and then come up with a preferred site. Is that correct?
And that sounds like it comes back to Councillor Scott's point about pushing them, and Councillor Woodhead's point, pushing them into a very clear process from our point of view. This is what we want them to do, so when they present an alternative site, we won't need to worry about whether it meets what criteria, with whether it's NZTA or the Building Act or whatever.
Can I just further clarify this? We don't have a criteria ourselves.
We have some
criteria. Yes, through you, Mr. Chairman. We did establish some criteria with OPIS, and those are the criteria that are in there. What I'm suggesting with this resolution is we revisit those and make sure that we agree them between the three parties.
Right.
And that way we then have a common basis for making an evaluation.
That makes sense. Very sensible. Yeah. Okay.
Comfortable?
Thank you.
Comfortable, Councillor Lawton?
Yes, thanks.
So now that's been incorporated as B. So I'm going to put 8B. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Reluctantly.
I sense that was unanimous, but I'm not going to make a big issue of it. And we move to 8C, which essentially asks staff to keep the elected arm informed as to the progress of this request. Happy with that? So I'll put that motion. 8C, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you very much, everyone. Moving on to 11.1, which is the report from the implications of a PM 2.5 standard on air quality management. We'll take the report as read. This is very much a report for noting. It tells us essentially about the current guidelines, and we are struggling to meet the current guidelines with the PM 10 standard, and the vibes from central government is that that's going to essentially become more restrictive, and a PM 2.5 standard would certainly put a greater emphasis on us doing something more by way of perhaps implementing a more stringent policy. Welcome, Deborah. We take the report as read, but you're happy to take some questions?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Any questions for Deborah? Councillor Hope.
Thank you. Through the Chair, I have a question to ask you, and I've been just thinking about what we've been talking about, which is 550 new houses going in Cromwell. Do we have anything that comes to the ORC where a new developer or a subdivision, is there any new heating source in Central Otago or Queenstown Housing that are experimenting with this that we know of, or is there any way that we can get a new subdivision developer, that sort of thing, to come on board with this to try and reduce the problems we've got up Central? Can you update us on anything, please? Is there any progress that we're aware of?
Through the Chair, the short answer is no, specifically. I do think that's probably the direction we need to go.
Right.
None of this analysis takes into account new development, right, which of course is just additive to the cumulative PM load.
Right.
So the new development, I think we've had discussions through the air quality strategy working group that new developments will need a different look than what we currently experience with existing stocks. They're newer houses, they're better built to a better standard, and that a different heating component could be looked at for those houses. Absolutely. So it is just a matter of driving in that direction.
And how, sorry, I just want to ask a further question. So we drive that, but how does it happen? This is the thing I don't quite understand. Do we say to CODC, do we say to Queensland's like, look, we want to see this as the governing body, we want to see pellet fires. I mean, it's all about to me having heat pumps and everything, but if you've got no power, you're still in trouble. So how does it work? You know, is that a discussion somebody has with somebody else? Or, you know, that's the bit that I find...
Yeah, and I believe that's the collaborative effort that it will take between ORC, TLAs, developers, manufacturers of home heating, home heating association, all the parties. I think eventually we'll have to come around the table and say what are we going to do? What can we offer?
Thank you,
Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. We continue to talk about air quality and get nowhere. I think eventually is a terrifying phrase to use when we've got another 840 houses going into Cromwell, Wanaka's population absolutely booming. We need to get on and get some sort of way to work with this. I know it's a very difficult area for many reasons, but I really push. We've got some urgency on this one.
Thank you, and thank you, Councillor Hope. Councillor Deaker, and then Councillor Scott.
I liked reading this paper, and thank you very much, Deborah. Very thorough, very scientific. The ULEBs, I hadn't heard that expression before. Are they available? What do they burn, and what do they cost?
Right, through the chair. The ULEB, that is a nomenclature that's been given to kind of the next generation or a different design burner than we're all commonly used to. And it was coined by Environment Canterbury. It's an ultra-low emission burner. And they use that term to indicate that a burner has passed an emission test, a Canterbury method emission test that accounts for startup, loading, different moisture contents, etc., and has passed that test and come in at a very low emission rate, 0.5. They are a dual burning, two-chamber unit.
Burning wood.
So it's a downdraft burning wood. Various types of wood can accommodate mixed moisture contents. Somewhat takes away the human element of how you load it, what you load it with. And those burners, last winter, I did see one at MITRE 10. I did ask them at the end of winter if they'd sold any. No. It looks different. It is different. It works differently. And it will take a familiarity and an introduction, I believe, into Otago for people to become familiar with what that looks like. They are being quite commonly introduced in Canterbury, in Nelson, in Bay of Plenty, Hawke's Bay. So they are starting to make an appearance, and I believe they will here eventually.
Costly?
More costly than getting your Massport, but coming down. Originally, there are now 17 ultra-low burners that are authorized by MFE to be used. Originally, there were no New Zealand-manufactured ULEBs, but there are now. And I think that will help the market as well. The most expensive were, you know, fully automated, and $7,000. At the lower end, those were some Italian ones. At the lower end, they might be $3,000 now, $3,500. So it's changing. It's new and it's changing.
Thank you, Councillor Scott and Councillor Laws.
Yeah, no, thanks for this report. Look, a few points from my perspective. I think the first one puts the point, you know, 2.5. What this report is basically saying is that the PM 2.5 measure is more closely aligned to human health requirements as opposed to the PM 10. So on that basis, it's hard to argue with. My understanding is that's the global view.
Yes.
And so let's get on with it. You know, let's just you know, let's just get on with that. And so that whole discussion point of, oh, you know, is this a health issue? You know, who cares? Well, the alignment is tighter and it's there. Yeah? And my second point is, it's also made in this report, is that regardless of whether it's PM10 or PM2.5, that a similar type of effort is required in terms of what we need to do as a community. I think it makes that point. But I make the point that that's correct, but it may impact on whether some communities pass or not in terms of how we, you know, as the regulator, as we tighten that up. So, for example, I think Mosgiel, even Dunedin, I suspect those in Airshed 1 are that damn bad that whether it was PM, whatever, they're going to fail. So there is a regulatory situation there. They're saying in the report that I think PM 2.5 is aligned with, you know, combustion. I'm actually hoping that in the future, electric cars, which we talk about in terms of global warming, will have a positive impact on, like in Dunedin City. I would have thought most definitely, yeah.
Certainly.
So, you know, it's not all bad. As Councillor Lawton said, you know, we need to get on in terms of air strategy. One of my questions is, it's because my understanding is if you build a house in Central Otago and you put a wood burner in, it needs to meet 0.7 grams per kilogram, I think, if I can find the right unit. Is that correct? 0.7?
Yeah. Through the chair. In an urban airshed,
yeah,
which includes Alexandra, Arrowtown, Clyde and Cromwell,
yeah,
in the airsheds and the air zone boundaries actually,
yeah,
that is correct. Anything that is installed now is meant to be 0.7 grams per kilogram.
So that's,
yes,
you know, so this is the second time I've said this today, but, you know, we do actually have a role, and let's make sure it's being enforced. I think what we're saying statistically is that if everybody gets them, it still mightn't work in terms of PM, you know, 2.5 and all this type of thing. But that's where I'm just a little bit surprised with your concluding remark, where you say that, as reported previously, continual reliance on MFE-compliant burners with 1.5 grams per kilogram will not accomplish the goal of meeting the NESAQ, whether that be PM10 or 2.5.
That's the key.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, what about 0.7?
Through the chair, I take it I may have hit the 1.5 instead of 0.7.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah.
It won't.
It won't. Those burners that are 1.5 and 0.7 that are of the standard, what are called low emission burners, not ultra low, low emission, standard one chamber burner, it will also not meet PM10 standard or a PM2.5 standard.
Okay, so a good report. Thank you. At some point we've got to fix the big picture.
Okay, you mentioned about the strategy. My understanding, we're consulting on the air quality strategy as we speak, and I think submissions close on the 11th of May.
I believe that's correct, yes.
But it doesn't actually say much, does it?
No, true, because there needs to be an implementation plan or something that sits underneath that. So I imagine the Chief's going to speak in a moment, and she may pick up on that aspect. But Councillor Laws.
Oh, you know my views on this, so I won't repeat them. But I do need to point some things out. That paragraph you've just read out is the key, Brian. Whatever you do, it ain't going to change just because of the geography and topography of Central Otago.
No, that's not
okay. Correct. The only thing that you could do would be to get rid of burning any form of solid fuel.
Well, okay, that's one option.
Let's not have a cross-table discussion.
That would be stupid option number one. Because the key here is that we want our people to be healthy. Now, that is what you're suggesting drives you. Nothing will make you more unhealthy or more at risk of death or of any form of hospital admission they're being called.
So we want to start.
So let's just go from that simple premise that the best way to stay healthy in Central Otago in winter is to be warm.
Okay.
That's the first thing. The second thing is there's a whole series of divisions. In actual fact, in Cromwell, can I just use that as an example? The 840 we've talked about today is...
I won't even be able to see it.
It's literally the tip of the iceberg.
That's good.
There are 1,500 sections planned for Cromwell in the next 12 months. And that will give you some indication of the massive growth. There are other subdivisions also in Cromwell that have been approved by the Central Otago District Council. The growth in Central Otago is huge. And the problem is not going to be the new homes, actually, because most of those new homes will have lesser or lower emission solid burning units anyhow. It'll be the older homes that are there, that are single glazed, older, and would never think of having compliant wood burners. They're there now, and coal burners for that matter. And they're going to continue to burn because they want themselves to be warm. Good on them. Here's my problem with this whole paper, though, and with your argument, Brian, and with where we're going on this issue. In the last 14 years, child asthma hospitalisation rates have increased by 45% in New Zealand. Let me just run you through that figure again. Child asthma admission rates into New Zealand hospitals have increased by 45% in the last 14 years across the country. And yet, why? No one knows why. No one knows why. We still don't have a correlation between these statistics here that's presented in this paper and negative health outcomes in Central Otago. We still don't have the ability to look at hospital admissions into Dunstan or Dunedin and say, here is a direct consequence of poor air quality in Central Otago. That research doesn't exist. And yet here we are thinking about changing air quality without having done one basic piece of research. Prove that there's a problem. Not using overseas PM2.5 and PM10 data, but using our own health system. Now, if child asthma rates have increased by 45% in New Zealand over the last 14 years, and we don't know why, Then where's the correlation here between improving air quality and improving health outcomes in Central Otago? The science is deficient. One of the things I've been taught coming on to this particular organisation is you make good empirical science-based decisions. And we lack that certain quality to be able to say to the community, you stop being warm, you reduce the level of heat in your communities and your houses, because we think it's good for you. But we haven't actually proven the point. I'm saying that now. I will oppose any move around this council table until I have the science to prove that there is a health problem in Central Otago from the existing way in which we keep ourselves warm.
Thank you. Councillor Woodhead.
Well, many of the points I was going to make, Councillor Scott's made. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be here tomorrow for the workshop, but those of you that are, I hope you listen carefully and are able to pass that information on, because there is some expertise there with respect to the health sector. My understanding is that the health impacts of poor air quality are well known and understood.
No, they're not.
But, well, that's your opinion.
Councillor Lawrence, please.
It's in this report.
A good report, Deborah.
Thank you.
2.5 just makes the hill a bit higher and possibly a bit steeper. The other thing, and I share all councillors, I think, but Councillor Lawton's expressed it, frustration with what the next step here. We've been waiting a number of years now, and how do we progress? But I understand that there's some rumblings, and Mrs Gardner, you might be going to tell us about it, some rumblings about the work that's actually occurring with respect to the outputs from the review of the National Environmental Standard.
I'm not sure that I can comment in great detail on that right. So much, but I can comment on some other things.
Right. Sorry, but look, it appears that we might be going to hear something in June.
Okay. Come back to the Chief in a moment. Yep. Councillor Robson.
Thank you. I think we were getting into a bit of a policy discussion rather than a discussion on the paper, which is a technical one, and I think it's a good paper in summarising the issues. Just for clarification for Councillor Hope and some other people as well, there's a gap between the building code, which says that people need to install a 1.5 or better, and so TAs enforce that by law, and then there's our roles, which are the 0.7, and so we sort of go, well, we're enforcing, look up the chimney and look what's coming out of the chimney, and we've got no real way of measuring that. So there's a little bit of a gap. So that's where the collaboration really needs to come in with the district councils and sort of voluntarily almost enforcing our 0.7. So it's a bit tricky with that. I'm going to refrain from commenting on any policy matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Robson. Councillor Lawton, then Councillor Kempton.
I'm actually wondering, hopefully we'll find out more about what's happening in the future.
Yeah.
And I am hoping that will include things like the National Environment Standard, because there is a lot of challenges here that are presented by not having more pro-action at the national level, including things like looking at more innovative ways of heating our homes, which would require much less emissions through the likes of district heating plans. Broaden out with discussion.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton.
Councillor Robertson's point on Building Act and the adoption of the Building Act requirements by territorial local authorities is really important, because at the moment we're saying these are the rules. Well, how the hell do I achieve that when I've got a building consent for a burner that might not ever get there? So one of the things that we've got to do as a way forward, I mean, good planning involves looking at the constraints and seeing what you can remove well ahead of time. And I think we've got to get into an advocacy role around changing the Building Act.
Yep.
Now, start with the Building Act, because then you're not arguing with every TLA. There's no reason why this council can't advocate in the process of new NESs coming into force, can't advocate the central government to say, you understand that there's this blockage. You can remove that easily for everybody. So I think that we ought to be doing that as part of the process in terms of way forward.
Can I also just add, I've sat through at least one workshop, if not two, with QLDC, and never heard that what actually needs to happen is communication between our two councils and for them to voluntarily enforce it. I've never heard us communicate that clearly to QLDC, in particular about Arrowtown air quality. So why haven't we?
Yeah, okay.
It seems
like
a good point.
Okay. Chief Executive, would you like to share your comments with us?
Sure. So thank you, Councillor Lawton, because in some ways you've kind of started to address what I was going to say, which was we have an opportunity right now, and we have a number of opportunities in which to play that advocacy role. What we don't do all that much of at the moment in a way that's sort of cross-cutting across our functions is we're not commenting through submission processes on LTPs or annual plans, and we're also not regularly commenting on things like subdivision consents and other things. We do a little bit of it, but we are not doing it in a rounded way, and I think that is a real opportunity for us to be playing that advocacy role. We absolutely need to be having those conversations with our TLAs and be really clear about the expectation that our rules are followed. There are baselines set in all kinds of legislation, but it's very clear that when there is legislation, we also have the ability to set a baseline that's greater than that or requires a more stringent condition than that. So we can advocate for some change to the Building Act. I don't have any issue with doing that. But I also think, you know, that communication with our TAs, both in a relationship sense, but also in a formal sense, documenting our concerns is really important. I know we also have concerns about compliance, and we're not going to go and knock on people's doors at 9 at night and have a look at what they're burning. But there is an opportunity for us, perhaps during construction times, to do some spot checks or whatever into some of these new properties to make sure that the right types of appliances are being included. So we could think about that potentially. We'd have to think about a number of other things as well, and whether that's possible to do some of it. But certainly we've got to advocate, and I think we need to do that through formal channels as well as informal conversations.
Can I ask that, well, just following up that question?
Councillor Lawson.
Thank you. Are you going to be, for example, does the ORC put in submissions to, as a matter of routine, all the subdivisions that are happening in Central Otago and the Lakes?
No, so we do. We have one person who does some work around commenting. Oftentimes we'll comment on things like flood hazards and other matters. But I guess what I'm saying is we need to probably look at that and build that a little so that we are more regularly commenting and taking the opportunity to participate in some of these more formal processes, just as much as we're taking the opportunity to have those relationship-type conversations outside of formal process.
Wow.
Okay. No further comment from anybody? It sounds like, from an operational point of view, we're going to increase the focus on activities by TLAs when it comes to new developments, resource consents, that sort of thing. And also from a staff-to-staff level, greater collaboration, and certainly looking at air quality and, I suppose, other planning matters. That's basically what you're saying?
Okay.
It's got to be part of the big picture strategy.
Yeah.
Part of it all fit together.
So, for example, second generation plan with Dunedin City, I wonder whether air quality has been something, I suppose we're looking probably more Mosgiel. I mean, was that an unfair question for you? Is that something that we did emphasise during that process? Maybe not. Probably an unfair question for... just forget what I said. Councillor Kempton.
Look, I just reiterate, I think it's important by all means talking with the TLAs, but you try to go back as near as you can to source to actually cut the whole thing off the pass, and that's central government and the Building Act. First port of call, TLA, second port of call, in my view. So I think it needs to expand beyond just TLA.
Yeah, so I think the Chief was saying that she would follow that up. We're talking probably a remit, maybe LGNZ or somewhere.
We could absolutely look at doing that. Or we could also just look at having a conversation with the relevant minister.
Thank you.
Yep. Excellent. No further discussion. Would someone like to move that the report be received? Moved by Councillor Hope, seconded by Councillor Robertson. Any discussion? If not, put a motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against, carried. Moving on to the Director's Report. Once again, we will take the report as read. Three items there. If we just work our way through Civil Defence and Emergency Management, this is the Ministerial Review, of which we have fed in a submission and had some dialogue with the review panel, the development of lifelines, more work being done there, and the Otago Risk Register is being updated in collaboration with a whole heap of parties as outlined. And any questions, queries for that one? Councillor Scott and Councillor Lawton.
I'd just like to say I hadn't actually realised that Civil Defence now was under a particular directorate, and so the report will come through this committee. And I'd just like to say that I think that's a good thing in terms of transparency and that actually, in terms of our governance role, having a better appreciation of progress and issues. So thank you. I also look forward to, at some point, getting a little bit more feedback in terms of the outcomes, because from the first annual Lifelines Forum that was held in Dunedin on the 30th of January, and in fact I would have gone along if I'd known it was on, and a workshop was held in Alexandra on May regarding the Otago Risk Register. So there's all this stuff going on. At some point it would be quite good to just understand that a little bit better. Thank you.
I'm sure staff have... Yeah, absolutely. Chief Executive.
Yes, I'm sorry if I can't recall whether we discussed it or not, but we did make that...
Yeah.
That shift, the previous chief executive had the function reporting to him directly. It didn't fit in terms of the way that we do our business, and it seemed to make an awful lot of sense to have the natural hazards and engineering function sitting alongside the civil defence function, so which is why we've made that change. Absolutely take on board what you said about having some of the civil defence work more integrated into council. That is also some of my thinking. And I guess, we're still at that point where we're developing, I guess, that function more broadly with the TAs, but also needing to just be really certain about whose role is which role, and making sure we're not duplicating effort. So that's one of the other reasons why we've made that structural change.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. Excellent.
Councillor Neil.
That report you're talking about is the one prepared by Mr Hawker, is it?
Mm.
Right. I struggled with the report in that we had the BCD and the FDARPU and the ZYM, and well, that's all very well. But if you intermingle that with a bit of what those things actually mean, and occasionally it did, then I would have grasped the report a lot better. I'm also rather a cynic on some of these things, because I believe no matter how much you spend on being prepared for natural disasters, you'll never be totally prepared and you'll always be caught unawares. And so it becomes a balancing act of how much you spend being prepared, you know, and just how much you take risks. And it always needs to me to be balanced. There are those that are involved in the industry who would have a gold-plated safety system, and there are those who would take a lot more risks, and hopefully we fit somewhere in between, but I just want to make that point.
Thank you. Dr. Palmer.
Yes, through Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add that following the workshop at the last committee round, I've asked Mr. Hawker to reschedule further sessions with Council so that you may have input to the group strategic plan, and that will be a mechanism for ensuring that we get the right level of service and the right focus on the right risks, which I think will address that issue.
Thanks.
So we'll be coming back very soon on that.
Absolutely.
So I also recently, with Dr. Palmer, also had a conversation with Mr. Hawker in regards to getting the balance right between exercises, training and preparedness and some of the critical deliverables that we need to see coming out of the function, which are obviously our plan, our new plan, and also community response plans, which we all know the cavalry's not coming, so those community response plans are incredibly important, and I'm very keen to see those delivered within the next 12 months.
Very good. Any further comments on that part of the director's report? If not, moving on to the climate, river flow and groundwater update, sort of a mixed bag for the year, with some low levels, record low levels back in October, November, and some of the rivers. Any comments? Take it as read. Have enough. Moving on to item 4, which is the leaf flood protection scheme. A little update there where that section is progressing, and also covers off the Dundas Street investigation work as well. Dr. Farming, did you have anything to comment with either of those projects?
Yes, to assure you, Mr. Chairman, just in respect to the Dundas Street work, we'll be coming back to the June Council meeting with a request for approval to go to construction tender for the Dundas works. Looking to go to construction tender in the third week of July and come back to September Council meeting with a request to award a construction contract, assuming we get favourable tenders.
Thank you, Dr. Palmer. Any queries? Councillor Woodhead.
Yeah, thank you. Barnett. When, remind me, and I've asked this a number of times, when's our consent run out?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. The initial consents were for a 10-year period from March 2008. So we've been through a process of renewing the consents to give us the time period we need, and we've also been quite conservative several years, not just a few more months. So that's in hand.
Good. Thank you.
Anyone comfortable? Someone like to move that the report be received and noted? Move Councillor Kempton, second by Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, the motion, all those opposed, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. There are no notices of motion. That concludes the technical committee meeting. Thank you very much for your participation.
Communication.